It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, I had nothing for the opening, and then I got three things. So, do we want to talk about why there's no Zootopia 2? Do we want to talk about 5-Hour Energy's recent campaign, or do we want to talk about a new subgenre of horror movie that I've just figured out existed?
Those could all be the same thing.
They could be.
I'm more interested in the horror genre thing, I think.
I don't know if it's that interesting. I watched the trailer for a movie, and I've discovered it's the third movie I've seen with essentially the same plot, such that I think it's a new genre of horror movie, which is a police station is closing down, and this is the last night. And so one officer, usually a woman, not always, is just there just in case somebody rings or whatever. It's the final shift. In fact, the most famous of these movies is just called Last Shift. And then, like, fucking demons happen. Like, that's the movie. And when I first saw one, I was like, this is interesting. And then I saw another one, I'm like, this is kind of the same. And then I just saw a trailer, I'm like, this is now apparently a subgenre. So,
I mean, it's a police department.
I want to say one time I've seen was maybe a hospital, but it's always a staffed facility that is usually moving to, like, the newer, cooler one. And so for this one last night, there's only one person on duty. And it should be just nothing happened. But then fucking cultists and blood off the walls and all sorts of things.
Like, if our podcast...
a particular fan.
If our podcast was going to move to a big, fancier podcast, and so...
Exactly.
You were there all by yourself because I'm already at the new facility, podcast facility, and you're doing a podcast by yourself, and that's when things happen.
Exactly. Just in case anyone emails again. We shouldn't laugh at that because telecommunications horror movies have become a genre, and some of them are not terrible. Most of them are, but that's true of any horror genre. Some of them are getting real interesting. I get way more into the, like, devices they use to explain why it all has to happen in the thing, and those can sometimes get cool and sometimes not. But okay, that didn't take long enough. Let's talk about 5-Hour Energy. 5-Hour Energy's got a new commercial campaign, and it goes like this. Remember when you were in college and basically you survived on fucking 5-Hour Energy? Why don't you keep doing that?
That's it?
They say it nicer than that, but yeah, the premise is, remember when you used to heavily use 5-Hour Energy in college? Well, why don't you do that now? It'll be great. You know, just like it was in college. Because I'm not going to lie, 5-Hour Energy didn't exist when I was in college, but we had no Doz and Vivarin and, you know, just good old-fashioned coffee. And yeah, that stuff did make me function at times, like, responsible for most of my motor skills certain days. and I liked a lot of things about college. That was not on the list. I don't ever want to have this urge to like relive the glory days of hyper caffeinating and basically living as a zombie to get through. Because maybe that's the thing too. I didn't hyper caffeinate to live my best life. I hyper caffeinated to get by. Like, if I stayed up all night and I had a paper due or I had a class that I couldn't miss for whatever reason, I just tossed back as much caffeine as I could hold to get me through writing that paper or getting through that class, and then I would go home and collapse. And it worked. But it's not, oh, I don't want that now.
Well,
I just think, do things like sleep, you know.
Sure. I think it's trying to, I think it's the audience here is not you. It's people who are finding that their work life is not that much different than their college life was, where they're way too tired in the morning, where they, to spend time with their kids and have some kind of sanity in their life, they might stay up a little later than they probably ought to. And, you know, they're struggling in the early hours of work, or maybe they're struggling in the later hours, right? Because they go to lunch and there's that kind of dip in productivity there. So they're just saying, look, this worked for you in college when you were feeling like this, so it can work now. I mean, I know a lot of people who worked with us who, I mean, their morning hours were not very productive because they just struggled to wake up, or their afternoon hours weren't very productive because they struggled after lunch to, you know, just kind of stay alert. So I don't know.
All right. I have several points to respond with. The first one that I had many, many times. That explanation you just gave, sound, reasonable, valid. Some of the worst podcasting possible. You never want, like, what is this? Actually, I think maybe. No. How is that a podcast?
I don't
Come
know.
On. Is... It's not funny. It's not argumentative. It's not particularly novel. It's just facts. It's boring. Anyway, second thing, I know that life. I still caffeinate pretty heavily, but I used to a lot. Ad applied, ad ACT. I did that a lot. And 5-Hour Energy has commercials for that. I believe they had that 2:30 feeling was their deal. And I'm not saying. I mean, I don't particularly like 5-Hour Energy, but I understand the market for that and all this. But the third thing, and this one is very, very, very important. If you find your work life as an adult, day to day, to be incredibly similar to your college life, day to day, you have done at least one of them very, very wrong. Because I used a lot of caffeine, but holy crap, if my life at ACT was like my life in college, I don't think they would like me. And if my life in college had been my life in ACT, I never would have graduated.
Well, I mean, a lot of businesses are complaining, not a lot, not as many as the media, certain media outlets would want you to think, but there are some businesses who complain that younger, you know, employees do kind of expect their work to be like college was. They expect it to be kind of fun. They expect it to be, you know, maybe not very high standards for productivity or quality. They expect, you know, because I don't know, when I was in college in the late 80s and very, very early 90s, there were plenty of people who seemed to just be going to college. Well, I can't say that. Just about everybody I knew, if you asked them why they were going to college, they'd say, well, because this is how you get a better paying job. It's an investment, and it's going to be worth it when you get on the other side, you can get a better job. Even though their peers from high school were getting jobs like right out of high school. And then when they would go to the same place and get a job, they weren't making as much as their peer that worked there for 4 years. They did have more upward mobility and things like that. Okay. But now, and I don't remember hearing anyone say this back in my day, now kids will just come right out and say, I'm just coming here for the experience. I'm just coming here to party for 4 years. I'm just coming here to delay adulthood. I mean, they'll say that. I don't think anybody I knew even thought that way. I think they were going to college because there was some practical, and you know, if they partied and had a good time, that was just sort of frosting on the cake.
I would agree. I mean, don't get me wrong. I was very self-aware of delaying adulthood in college, but that was just like a bonus. That wasn't the reason to go. Fair, also, in my case, I would have been an insanely expensive just 4 years to have fun. As is, it was an insanely expensive piece of paper that arguably hasn't done me much good. But,
well, I mean, I knew a lot of that was something that was true in my day, too, was that one of the things that would happen as soon as you got to college is you'd get all this mail from credit card companies that would sign you up. They didn't care that you were going to get six cards and max them all out and not be able to pay. So even in my day, there was this attitude about borrowing money or whatever that they didn't take it very seriously. So when you talk about, well, that's a very expensive way to just have a good time or party. Well, I don't think a lot of kids today care.
Well, yeah, you went to college at the time when we were just starting to have very special episodes about the dangers of credit. Like by the time I got there, most of us knew. We're like, yeah, we are going to fuck ourselves over with these things. And some of us still did. But you were there where credit was the best thing since sliced bread. Late 80s. Like, that's a solid time of, like, credit cards. You can just live like a king and it'll be fine.
Yep. Yeah. A lot of my friends fell for that. I mean, I didn't, fortunately, because my family had credit problems before I got to college, so I knew to avoid that, but a lot of my friends didn't.
I mostly didn't because my parents were so obsessive about it. They didn't have those problems, and they never let me hear the end of it. Like, how that, to the degree that we basically don't use credit cards almost ever. We have one. And there are some situations to this day where you just have to use that because nobody likes a debit card or whatever. But for the most part, we just use debit cards. But no, I was raised that there is never any reason for any purpose at all to carry over a balance month to month on a credit card. And so I didn't until I was old enough that I was like, eh, my parents didn't know everything. And then I did it. And then I had debt that rolled over for a while. But I did eventually get that taken care of.
Well, I think some sociologists or other people that are, you know, kind of watching these trends think that a lot of these same kids who go to college just because it's the cultural thing to do and they're just trying to have fun, they don't care about their grades, they don't care about any of that, that when they go into the workforce, some of them think to themselves, all right, I delayed adulthood, now it's time to start. And they're fine. They're just like any workers that anybody has ever had. But there are a few that, you know, since they at no point during their, like, having jobs when they were adolescents or having jobs while they're in college, at no point did they figure out that adult piece. So now maybe they're done delaying adulthood, but they don't know how to do anything. They don't know how the world of work works. And so they're kind of difficult to manage. And sometimes they seem to treat the workplace like going to work is like going to class, right? And in college these days, as I understand it, and this was happening even back when I was in college, performance standards weren't very high because so many kids were just there to get a job or whatever. They weren't really interested in learning anything. They just wanted to get through. They just wanted to get that piece of paper. And a lot of professors understood that, and so they wouldn't make the classes very challenging, or they'd make it really easy to know what was going to be on the test and things like that. So a lot of kids are getting out of college not being very not being challenged in college, not learning a work ethic. Maybe they didn't even have to get a job while they were in college. So they get to work and they just don't, they don't know how work works. And
I think that may apply more to public inexpensive schools like you went to.
Probably. Yeah, all those kids probably go to state schools. You're right. They're not going to go to like an expensive private school.
They do go to fancy, expensive private schools for about a semester. Those existed. As a freshman, I remember being like, this guy seems way out of place. He seems like a frat dude from a, like a state university. What the hell? Second semester, freshman year. Oh, he's gone? Oh, okay.
Got it. Yeah, I'm sure that's right. I'm sure that's still true.
And to be fair, at my school, some people who didn't have that attitude still buckled under the pressure periodically. Grinnell was always big on, we will only give you 8 semesters of financial aid, and most of our students graduate after 8 semesters. We like to keep that up real high, but it's 8 semesters of actual attending. So Grinnell was real big on, you know what? Why don't you take a semester off? Why don't you go do something else? Maybe you come back.
Or maybe you don't. So
I had a lot of friends. Well, and I mean, that's after a semester of academic suspension. And then if you fuck that one up, then they're like, you know what? And so I had multiple friends, including friends who I didn't know about. Like, I start school and all of my older friends are like, oh, this person's really cool. And I didn't meet them until later because they were on academic suspension.
Wow.
So there was a lot of that because they were like, no, we want to keep our stats. 8 semesters. You will graduate in 8 semesters. If you don't think you can do that, well, spend a semester someplace else for a little
bit. Mm.
And they didn't go to other schools. They just like lived with their parents, or actually in one case went and became a legal prostitute in Nevada. She dined out on a lot of stories after she got back to school. But anyway, hello everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world hosted by real life Homer Simpson and real life Ned Flanders. I won't tell you which is which. You'll have to figure out yourself. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 626.
626.
Mm-hmm.
Famous model of airplane by Boeing.
Is it?
I don't think so. I think they're all 7s.
Oh, okay.
Check out my nails. They are, it's almost a little too late now, but they look sort of crackled and broken. That's intentional.
It is.
It's a top coat that breaks as you put it on, so it gives these weird little crack effects. It's pretty cool.
Nice.
The kids next door have been one of them has been into painting his nails for a long time, but the younger one is now into painting his nails, and they inspired me to do mine again. And then one time when we were over there for our weekly dinner, I was like, next week after dinner, I will bring the giant thing of nail polish and we'll just paint each other's nails. So we did that, and the 14-year-old did these ones for me. He did a pretty good job.
Nice.
For those of you just joining us for the first time, we have a hat. Yes. And it's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they want. And then the hat forwards to us. We read them. We talk about them. That's our deal. All right. Good night. So how's your week been? You are free, aren't you?
Well, technically the last day of classes is tomorrow, but I am finished with everything.
You're not doing shit, right? So,
I work on my own stuff related to the discipline when I'm not in school. Yes,
we all think that's a terrible idea.
And I've lately been trying to not do that during my break, because even though I love those things and I enjoy them, because while I'm in school, they're not very recreational. They're not, they're not very renewing. They just make me feel like I'm still in school. I still love them and I still enjoy them, but I do notice that when school starts again, I feel like I didn't get a break. So while the week is still going, I'm going to finish a few of those things. And then next week I'll start.
Party.
Well, you know, the thing I'm working on is developmental theories, because I don't think that the developmental theories that we have are quite adequate. So I'm kind of working on that.
I find my developmental theories to be incredibly adequate. So you keep that opinion to yourself, Cameron.
But tomorrow, I think what's going to happen tomorrow is Abby is taking volunteer time off, not paid time off, but volunteer time off. She can take time off from work that's specifically tagged for volunteer stuff.
Oh, for not voluntary time off for which she is paid, for which she can do volunteer work.
Correct.
ACT at one point had something similar while I was there. You got like 3 volunteer days or something. I don't remember, but
right. So there's this app or whatever you can use to find people to volunteer for. And she found a group that needs people to go out and photograph, and I think also transcribe gravestones.
Ooh.
So I think tomorrow we're going to be driving around Eastern
Iowa.
That
sounds like your kind of weird shit, yeah.
Taking pictures and possibly transcribing gravestones.
Cool.
Which will actually be fun. I know that's weird to some people, but to me that's going to be pretty fun. And sometime now, Saturday, I think we're doing something with the kids. So Sunday is going to be the earliest time that I can open this box and do this thing that you got me. And I'm just chomping at the bit, but I'll do.
So we're going to have to dedicate next Thursday to you just going into, some would say, obsessive, unentertaining detail as to your experience.
You know, though, this place you got this from, you can buy a murder board kit with like 4 sections of cork board that you can like put up on the wall, and then yarn that comes with it and tacks and everything. Technically, if I ordered it soon enough and had it rushed, I could have it right behind me here next time. Nice. And I could tell you all about it. But I don't know if I'll do
that.
You
gotta be careful. Yes. You don't want to spoil the mystery. Other people might want to do the mystery.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
I was watching a Zifrank video, and their sponsor was Hunted Killer again. And so I saw all that stuff again.
Yeah.
They seem pretty cool. I mean, I wouldn't be unhappy if, like, I received one. I don't know that it is my thing, per se.
Mm.
I don't know. I'll be curious. One thing I work around a lot in, I mean, have you looked at it at all yet?
Well, I've looked at a few things in it, yeah. But, I mean, I've tried not to, because if I look too hard,
I'll get... Do you know if you will get a definitive answer?
Oh, I don't know that. I'll
be very curious about that.
Yeah, I have. Somehow, while I was looking for other things, I think I saw like articles or YouTube videos about the answer. So I think there is one.
I mean, I'll bet that there's at least a most likely, and you can find it on YouTube. But one of the things I've had to struggle with in therapy was sometimes you're never gonna know for sure. And
right.
So the idea that like it's, well, and I've played some of the Sherlock Holmes video games, and in some versions they never tell you if you're right. And in fact, the game is designed that there's basically not a right answer. There's just consequences for each decision. And I don't like the sound of that. So I don't know that it would be my kind of thing or not, but I think it sounds like a cool product.
Yeah, I can't wait. Although I do want to do this stuff with Abby and with the kids. So, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to...
Are you thinking about letting your wife join you in this investigation? Or are you just going to try and tackle it yourself? Well, or is she even interested? I mean, I guess.
I honestly didn't. I didn't really think about it at first. Then Abby said something. She said, well, do you want... I mean... Do you want to do it by yourself? Or do you want me to help you. And I think I was just assuming that we would do it just because, like, I mean, what am I going to do? Sit in here and do it by myself while she's doing something else?
It struck me as a thing you guys would enjoy together, but and I mean, it is your gift. Like,
so I didn't really think when she asked me, I did think, well, I suppose I could do it. I mean, you know, it's not like she doesn't have other things she could do, but I just naturally assumed that we'd do it together. And I think she would like to. So I think, yeah, we're going to do it together.
All right, cool. But that's how I always imagined it in my head, but
yeah. Well, that's why I did too, but she kind of made me think, oh, I guess it doesn't have to be like that, but I think she wants to. And I gave myself some room to decide what I really wanted, you know, like many times I just assume things, but I'm starting to realize it's okay to stop and go, well, what do I want? Like me.
Yeah, personally. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's important. So I did think about it and I thought, and while it's
not at all necessary for you to do it yourself, I would argue it is necessary for you to give yourself permission to figure out if that is something you want.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
I bought this for you, not for you and your wife.
Well, that's part of what helped me consider that was it's like, well, you know, this was a gift from, I mean, I didn't buy this for myself. This was a gift from someone else for me personally. And I know Tony wouldn't mind if I did it with somebody else, but he would want me to think about what I want. So what do I want? And I realized, yeah, the reason I was thinking that we would do it together is because it's not just because that's the natural thing for me to default. It's because that's what I would enjoy most. So that's what.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, if I had one, I would probably, I don't know if it would be with Trish, but like, I think it would be way more fun with at least two people. So you can like bounce ideas off each other and stuff like that. Which also may be why it's not my thing, because I'm not a great collaborator. But I mean, Trish and I have those things all the time where you stop and you ask the other one if they're okay with something that you're almost certain they are, and they always are, but it's just good to like, you know, you just because we're married, just because this is how things often are, you don't have to go this way. I think Trish every once in a while will be like, are you okay with this? And sometimes we'll forget, one of us will be like, of course, why wouldn't I? It's like, no, I thought you probably would. I just, you know, you need an opportunity to be fine.
I think that's a healthy thing for a married couple.
I would hope so. Because like you said, everybody should be able to drive their own head, as it were.
Yeah. I mean, even if the answer is always, yeah, let's do this together, it's always good to acknowledge we are choosing to do. We're not just going along. This is what we're choosing. I think that's good for the other person to be reminded of, and for you to be reminded of, and also just the opportunity to maybe say no sometimes. That's fine too.
And shit changes. You can be like, you know what? Maybe not.
Yeah. Right. Yep. That's good. How was your week?
You going to ask me questions about your week? You just talked about next week. You didn't talk about how this week.
It was just school. It wasn't anything.
This week hasn't been super interesting. Tomorrow night we're gonna go to a high school in Illinois, and we're going to see my niece in The Little Mermaid for the third time.
Third time?
My niece. Different production. This is the third time she has been in a production of The Little Mermaid.
Oh, should I have known that? Have you talked about that before?
Probably. I mean, she's been in 1,000 things, but her very first play experience, I believe she was 7, and she played a piece of coral in The Little Mermaid Junior, I think, with the local community children's theater. And then many years later, she played Ariel in, again, I think the local community children's theater, but much older. This was just a couple years ago. And now in her high school, she's again playing Ariel. So,
wow. Lead role. Wow.
Yeah. I think she was hoping for Ursula because Ursula is just more fun, but she's a senior. She's one of the stronger voices. Like, it just kind of worked out that way, which is fine. I think the boy whose life I was ruining might be playing Prince Eric. I can't remember. But yeah, so we're going to do that. There hasn't been a whole lot else going on.
Are you going to go up to that guy and say, don't be kissing the girl?
No, actually, I want to watch him do it because I think it's going to be awkward as hell because they are incredibly close, very platonic friends, I believe.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But they're both theater kids, so we'll have to see.
Yeah, theater kids.
So a few nights ago, we started watching on Hulu The History of the World Part 2.
Oh. Is there like a new version of that?
Or... that's why I said Part 2.
Oh. Oh.
Part 2 is new.
How was
Part
it?
1 is old.
Okay.
Part 1 is from 1981.
Oh, wow. 81, huh? I thought it was older than that even.
Me too, right? I would have guessed like late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But it's 81. Yeah, just in case people aren't in the know on this, History of the World Part 1 is one of the more well-known, I think, Mel Brooks films.
Probably, yeah.
And it is essentially a feature-length sketch series. Some of the sketches are short and some of them are large. There, I would say, three major sort of story arcs that have a bunch of stuff in a row, but then there are some little tiny sketches. And it was called History of the World Part 1, and that was kind of the joke of it. And in fact, at the very end of it, they had basically an ad for History of the World Part 2, which had really ridiculous things in it. And then nothing happened, of course, because that was the joke. Whatever. Well, they decided to fucking make it now with Mel Brooks. But instead of feature film, it is 8 half-hour episodes on Hulu. We've only seen one episode so far. And Trish had not seen History of the World Part 1.
Mm.
And I told her, I was like, do you want to watch that first? They probably aren't a lot of like references because of the length of time and the Nate, like, but if you want, we can watch that first. And because I've always had a very love-hate thing with, actually sort of with Mel Brooks in the same way that I have with Monty Python.
Mm.
Like, I hate some of their stuff and I love some of their stuff. And frequently both of those things live in the same movie.
Right.
And so we watched the first episode and enjoyed it. And then I told Trish last night, I was like, it's date night. We often watch a movie. Do you want to just watch a movie? So we watched the movie. I've seen that movie a few times, but I haven't seen it in a while. It's really fascinating. So it's very Mel Brooks. If you've seen a Mel Brooks movie, nothing about it should be particularly surprising. It is very dated in some kind of adorable ways and in some really problematic ways. It is super racist. It is super homophobic. It is super sexist. Although the sexism is some of the least, but it's there. It is very vulgar. There is a lot of toilet humor. There is a lot of very crude sexual humor. There's also a lot of comedic genius in it and some really impressive production and musical production. There are a couple of musical numbers that are still just solid. I paused it when we got to the section on the Spanish Inquisition because I knew that song was coming. And I told Trish, I was like, you are about to witness the best part of this movie. Just so you know, it doesn't get better than this. And it doesn't. Still solid. Me and my friends in like high school, we were all theater kids too, and we would sing at each other. We would sing We're Off on the Road to Judea, and we would sing The Inquisition, What a Show. And it was really fun to discover that in like a 10-minute music number, I still have most of it memorized. Fun fact, though, there's also a lot of weird things that are just like old vaudeville and old Catskills comedy and old movie comedy that you don't get. There's references that are like, well, like We're Off on the Road to Judea is a thing about a series of movies made by Bob Hope and somebody that were all called, maybe Bing Crosby, that were all called The Road To, and they were all like travel movies or whatever. And that's where that comes from. And I've never seen any of those. I didn't learn that until many years later, long after I'd seen this movie. And it has so many people who are dead now that I miss dearly. Gregory Hines, Madeline Kahn, B. Arthur is in this one. Cloris Leachman is one of the best things about her section. But then just weird shit. Henny Youngman's in this. Like, a legit Henny Youngman. Like, how many people are left who even know who that is?
Not many.
For real. I barely know him as a person. I mostly know him as a reference. But I mean, I did, enough that I saw him and I'm like, oh my God, that's Henny Youngman. Sid Caesar, of course, like, just also Sid Caesar plays a caveman. He's remarkably buff. I did, in general, seeing them really young, like young Mel Brooks was kind of handsome. Like, don't get me wrong, old Mel Brooks is too, but like in a leading man ish sort of way, I was surprised. But yeah, it's got a lot wrong with it. It's got a lot of cringy stuff in it. And I think a lot of it is because Trish was like, I was really surprised about this and this. I was like, yeah, but it's early 80s broad R-rated comedy. This was all that back then, whether it was, you know, the history of the world or some summer camp adventure, or like, this is gay people were hilarious. Black people were various specific things that it was funny to mention that they were, like all that kind of stuff. So it's very much the time. But History of the World Part 2 is a very good 2023 update. It is, I'm not going to say it's not immature in its humor at times, but in general, it's pretty funny. I did not find it particularly offensive. It very much has, I feel like, the spirit of what they were going for, but the taste level is much better. And it has every comedic actor you've ever heard of in it. It's insane. Kumail Nanjiani was in this episode. It's so I mean, I don't necessarily recommend the original one, although I think as a cultural artifact, it's worth seeing. And you know, if you're into Mel Brooks movies, that's great too. But I think the new one is good, and I don't think you have to have seen the first one at all. There are a couple of things, like in the first one, they reference the things that are going to be in part two, and one of them is Hitler on ice. Well, the first episode actually had Hitler on ice. And that's a little extra funny if you know that that was a thing from the first one, but only a little. It's funny on its own because it's 2023. So it's mostly just about how it's Hitler doing an ice routine and literally every nation hates him and he's a terrible piece of shit and all this stuff. Like, you know, except France, who gave him a 10. Because we always still got to make fun of the French. But one thing I will say that nobody gives a shit except for me about this. Watching History of the World Part 1 again, one of the other things they say will happen in History of the World Part 2 hasn't happened yet that I've seen. Jews in space. And it's just giant Star of David-shaped spaceships flying around in formation with some Hasidic rabbis in the window you can see, and like other goy come around in their spaceships and they shoot them. But they have a song, we're Jews in space. It is the same song from Men in Tights. It's literally the same melody when they have a song, we're men in tights. It's the same song. I don't know how I missed that before. These are arguably my two of my favorite Mel Brooks movies out of the three that I actually like.
Oh.
I don't know how I missed that. but I got it this time. So that was cool. Oh, also weird. It's a pretty small cameo. Hugh Hefner's in this movie. And I didn't know who Hugh Hefner was or what he looked like in 1981. So it's like a real, real young one.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. But there they are. Well, now I say it all out loud. It doesn't sound that interesting. But that is how my week went. So deal with it. Okay. We're still watching Atlanta. Still playing Horizon. I'm still watching Being Puppy Cat. Great show. Great show. I have not started my rewatch of the first two seasons of Ted Lasso.
Mm.
Even though I think Ted Lasso started yesterday, third season.
I think it did, yeah.
Partially because, you know, obviously I got time to kill because I'm not going to do it till it's all out. I am dragging my feet hard. I am worried that the magic is lost. Like, I have trepidation. There's no indication that that's the case.
Mm.
But it's like a lightning in a bottle thing. Like, not only maybe the third season took too long and it won't live up to it, but maybe when I watch the first and second seasons again, I won't feel the same thing. I don't know. Mm. I'm in a very different place than when I watch those.
That's true.
So, I don't know. So, I think I'm being hesitant because of that, but we'll see. Mm. I think that's it. All right, do your thing. You read the thing. I think we only got the one email, so.
The thing.
I've discovered the taking turns was effective, although I didn't write down what I did. But also, if I just sit here and make you do it, that's way easier.
There's two in here.
Oh, all right. Well, whoever was the oldest.
Role-playing game advice. I think it says role-playing game advise.
Role-playing game advise. Oh, we also had our second session of my sister-in-law's D&D campaign.
Oh.
That's pretty fun. Yeah. We're having a good time with that. It's the kind of fun that I'm like, it's fun to do. I don't know that it makes a fun story.
Oh.
But okay. We're having a good time.
That's good. All right, here we go. Azure Talent.
Don't call me that. So Azure Talent needs role-playing advice.
Yeah, role-playing advice.
Azure Talent has a lot of typos in his emails, and I like to think it's because he's the last person typing on a BlackBerry when he sends all these.
Oh, okay.
They're making a movie about that, by the way.
About what?
The founding and creation of the BlackBerry. To go with the movie about the founding and creation of Nike Air Jordans. And I forget what else. Like, that is a hot thing right now, is movies about companies in the 90s.
Okay. Azure Talon says, over on the Happy Jacks Discord, there has been discussion of a recent... For Native American RPG called Coyote and Crow. So a Native American RPG, I presume, by a Native American, you know, created by a Native American, called Coyote and Crow. Coyote and Crow, a setting in which North America was never colonized. They ask you in the setup to not play a Native character if you are not yourself Native.
Interesting.
I understand the idea of trying to work against appropriation, but it's a role-playing game. Seems weird in the general to restrict your play just our own race, gender, orientation, religion, or to limit those variations to fictional groups. Discuss. And he also says, also as a minimum 1/16 Native, according to family paperwork, does that qualify me to play a Native or just no more mixed than I probably am? What about a character like Kenny from Reservation Dogs and be a white guy who is way too into Native stuff for whatever fraction he may or may not be as a satire character? As And is it better to include diversity in your roleplay palette, knowing you're probably going to go overboard at some point, or simply to take no risk of offense, but also no chance of learning more about people different from yourself? Obviously, this assumes the characters are made and played in good faith, and it's not just a D&D minstrel show. And then he signs it Azure Talon. Parenthetically, he says, I'm pretty sure if you joke, this is my name, you're racist. I don't really know what that means.
I think that's a lot of stuff. Just about every word he knows.
Okay.
This is interesting. I have not encountered this before. I am familiar with other games that take this kind of tack on things. There's actually a Kickstarter that I backed 5-6 years ago that I have yet to receive the thing for, but the company's gone on to be very successful. That is a fantasy setting based on, well, some original content, but primarily based on African culture and legend, and it's meant to be primarily an RPG sort of setting, and they didn't discuss this at all. I get it. I feel like there's a lot of components to this.
I think so too.
The big one, and I'm just going to throw this out there, and maybe this is my white privilege talking, I don't know. If you are in a private game, and if you are certain everyone involved is comfortable with whatever you're doing, you all should be able to do whatever the hell you want.
That is one aspect, yes.
You also should not think for a moment that any of what you're doing necessarily translates outside of that one private game,
which I think most role players understand anyway.
I hope so.
I think everybody gets
that. I don't know, back speaking as an old school role player, there was definitely a time where everybody was really weirded out if you wanted to play a different gender. They weren't necessarily opposed, but they assumed that meant something, or why would you want to do that? That used to be a big deal, and nobody was going around saying, if you're male, you shouldn't play a female, whatever. But everybody was just like, why would you want to? That's not why, but whatever. Amongst my gaming group, we vary a lot in terms of race, orientation, gender identity, all that stuff in our games all the time. Explicitly race. I have almost all of the people I have gamed with regularly are white. Many of them have played varying. In fact, they frequently, for representation purposes, often it is rare for them to play white people in a lot of cases. Again, if it's in a fantasy context, and I think one could argue this is, because this is a fictitious world. I know it's based off an alternate timeline, but it is therefore a fictitious world. One could argue that you're not saying anything about the culture other than what they built into the game, because this isn't how it actually went for this culture.
Right.
I will admit, because it is a real Earth situation, that complicates things. If you're playing Forgotten Realms and you want to play a black person, I don't think the black experience in Forgotten Realms is I don't think there's anybody, you're not appropriating from anybody, because there are no black people in Forgotten Realms, because there are no people in Forgotten Realms, because Forgotten Realms isn't real. As opposed to a game set in modern day New York or whatever. And I feel like this is sort of in between. It is the real Earth, but it's a divergent timeline. How's that go? But all that is a little bit beside the point. The creators, theoretically, based on what Azucena said, say in the game, please don't do this. Presumably, they have created a setting where there are white people and black people, and it's, but like, because otherwise they're just saying, if you're not native, don't play this game, which,
right.
I mean, and I would definitely respect that in any sort of public thing. If I was going to run this game at a con or something, I would make sure that that was a thing, purely out of respect for the creators of the game. If I was running this game privately with my group, I do not think I would hold them to that. And as the GM, well, and that's the thing too. So if you're white and you are the GM, how's that go? Like, not only are you going to be playing a bunch of characters, which almost by definition, some of them are going to be native, but also you're presumably going to be making a lot more sweeping claims about the culture because you are essentially playing the culture. You are the whole world around it. So I don't know. But I also do need to add, it's very important. First of all, no, 1/16th Native American, according to your family paperwork, does not count for two reasons. One, 1/16th, very, very small amount. Two, it's not true. Every white person has this. We've got this because of the line of my grandfather's nose and random stories from a great grandmother who died before I was born. We've got some, and of course it's Cherokee because that's always the easiest one. Oh, it's Cherokee, whatever. So and the older people in my family will still say, like, oh no, I think it's real. No. It's no. Also, it wouldn't matter if it was, but it's definitely. So yeah, that definitely doesn't count. You are white. Super white.
I mean, I think another thing to think, well, I mean, there are games, by the way. I forget what the game is called. There's a game where you play. There was a squadron of female fighter pilots, Russian
strike witches.
Yeah. And you don't have a choice but to play a woman in that game. And that's kind of the point. Likewise, depending on how you're playing this game, who you're playing it with, why you're playing it, there could be a point to playing a Native American if you're not one, or to not. Like, there could be a game reason, not just a polite reason, or this is what the game designers said. There could be a game motivation, right? So there's lots of games that sort of ask you to take on an identity or ask you not to, but to interact with, you know, and so on and so forth. So there could be game justifications for any of these things, depending on what situation you're playing in. But as you said, if it's private, you know, it's just you and a few people and everyone's comfortable. I mean, nothing, it's not even so much an issue that you should or shouldn't, that you can. I mean, there's nothing's going to stop you. You know, no, the game creators aren't going to knock on your door and say, hey, knock this off. You know, nothing's going to stop you from doing
it. But I would, in this instance, I mean, I find it unusual in that I don't think I've ever encountered this before. And I feel like I've encountered games that specifically are trying to give different cultural perspectives. But I personally, out of respect for the creators, would adhere to their request in any sort of public or like an actual play or something like that.
That's right. I think that's reasonable. But as far as everything else goes, I mean, like, he's asking, well, can I do this? Of course you can. Nobody's going to stop you from doing any of these things. As far as whether or not it's appropriate, like, you know, should you, if you're doing it in the privacy of your own home and everyone's okay with it, but how should you feel about it? Should you feel guilty or whatever? I mean, again, that's guilt's a waste of time as far as I'm concerned. So I would just say, Azucena, do whatever you like. I would do the same. If I was doing it in public, though, I would probably, like, just like Tony, I would probably respect whatever the game designers wanted. But I don't think if I went to a public situation and someone was running it and they didn't do that, I don't think I would think they were racist or something, I would just think, well, that's just what they want to do.
Cultural appropriation in general is a difficult thing to pin down at times. Because you're not just supposed to be, like, it's not like I'm not supposed to interact with any cultural things that aren't my culture.
Right.
But nor am I supposed to take ownership of them as mine or change them while still implying that there's some sort of authenticity to it or something like that. I don't remember if I talked about this before, but the book my mom gave me, Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, is about video game designers, and it, two in particular, and the first game they ever made was this Japanese themed game, and the two creators in question were a half Jewish, half Korean American born young man and a Jewish American born young woman. And they did a bit where it was an interview years later when they were like hugely successful game designers talking about the original game and whether or not it was cultural appropriation, although the time when it came out, it didn't count as that. And he's busy saying, well, first of all, we didn't think in those terms back then, but also I don't generally approve of that because that means everybody only gets to do stuff related to their specific point of view. And what if you like other points of view? And also, I'm half Jewish, half Korean. I know less about either of those cultures than I do about Japanese culture. But somehow, if I had made the game Korean or Jewish, nobody would question it. And that seems crazy.
And I'm well, like,
this is a fictional interview. None of this happened. But I thought the point was very interesting.
The term cultural appropriation it used to mean when you interacted with someone's culture and acted like you were inventing it or that it was always part of your culture.
Basically everything Goop does.
Well, it's kind of like plagiarism, right? Plagiarism's kind of changed its definition too. It used to be if you deliberately take something from someone else and try to pass it off as your own. And a lot of people think plagiarism is, if you say something and for all you know, it's completely off the top of your head, but it happens to match something somebody else said that you didn't even know about, then you can get dinged for plagiarism on that. That's not really what plagiarism is. Cultural appropriation is the same thing. There had to be a little intention there, or maybe some ignorance if you've discovered this thing and you didn't realize it or whatever. But the point is, if someone is interacting with a culture, and they know they're interacting with a culture, and that's part of it, that they're interacting with this culture, they're not hiding the ball. They're not saying, you know, it's anything. They're saying they like this thing that belongs to this culture. They're acknowledging it. Well, that would never be seen as cultural appropriation back in the day, but sometimes it is now. And I don't.
And also, this is going out on a limb, but I would make sure you don't assume anything you encounter or experience within this RPG book, let alone in a session, counts as knowledge about the actual cultures on which it is based.
Sure, sure. Right. But I have a
very straightforward to me.
When I was in Arizona, there, one of my fellow students, a Latina woman, she was talking about how she had some friends of hers who were complaining about what they perceived as some cultural appropriation. And she disagreed. She thought this was just some white people who were appreciating her culture, which arguably that's what they were doing. They weren't saying it was theirs. They weren't claiming it or anything. They were just appreciating it. In her view, that's what they were doing. Mm. And when she described it to me, that sounded like what they were doing. And so she was confused by some, I think there were younger people in her community who were objecting to these white people participating in some of these things. So, I mean, you can even find people who are members of these communities who disagree on what is appropriation and is not.
Well, which leads to all the things of like, I can say that because I have a black friend who wasn't right. offended. Therefore, right.
yeah,
black people won't be offended.
Right. That's not, that doesn't, that's not right to do that. No. I'm just making the point that.
But that's the thing. It's all very personal, but it's all very real. Years ago now, I read an article. Maybe I've talked about it on here. Remember when emojis got the different shades?
Yeah, you were saying that you used to mix up your emojis and then you decided maybe you shouldn't do that.
I read an article arguing that emojis were cultural appropriation. And I think it was actually a point counterpoint between two black authors, one of whom thought it was and one of whom didn't.
Interesting. And
the argument for was basically, in my mind, it was a representation thing. Right. I didn't pick a set color. I picked a different color every time. But so that you know that I know that, like, oh, the thumbs up is brown because some thumbs are brown. And we should stop pretending that all thumbs are Simpsons colored or whatever. you know, and, oh, and just different things. That's in my head. That's what I'm doing.
Right.
And the argument is, or are you essentially co-opting a little bit of cachet? Is doing a brown thumbs up a little bit like putting a little jive into your tone while saying the phrase right on? You know, is it that? I don't think that was the example they got, but that was how I got the argument. It's like, sure, and I mean, and sure. I've done that too. I have said slang terms in what I would consider my normal voice, and I have occasionally said slang terms where I'm like, I kind of adopted a thing there, like not an accent. That probably wasn't great. And I thought about it. And mostly what it came down to is that's a valid argument. I think my argument was also valid, but less. If they're right and I'm wrong, I'm going to bother a lot of people. If they're wrong and I'm right, I do almost nothing. Right. Even if my thing is right, it's not. I didn't think I was changing the world by mixing up the colors. Honestly, it was a variation of I don't see color in my mind now. It was sort of that. And I find, because this comes up constantly in all these things with pronouns, with gender identities, with cultural appropriation. People say, I should be able to do X. Why can't I do X? And the answer is almost always you can.
Right.
But also you say, I should be able to. Okay. Yeah. If that's what you're going to do, do it. You come off like a dick. Like you can, but I can then think you're kind of a dick.
Sure.
And that's it. And like, if Azure Talon had said, like, oh, this says don't do this, dumb, I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want. Like, okay, you know you're coming off kind of like a dick. Or if he's like, I'm going to run a con game and I'm going to make a big thing, how, like, anybody can play native. All right, you got to come off like a dick. But if he's like, you know what, I get what this is going on and I wouldn't obviously do this in public, but my friends, we want to explore this and stuff. And obviously I'm not going to let it have extended impact. It's going to be a private thing. And I understand where they're coming from, but this is where I'm coming from. I'd be like, all right, you do seem kind of like a dick mostly in your life, Ivan Talon. But in this instance, no, I don't get that. That seems all right.
I think it merits mentioning, though, and this is something I think, you know, you coming from an anthropology background, I think can appreciate.
It's pronounced Caucasian.
Cultures are kind of living things and they interact and they change. And I mean, you know, when one culture comes in and sort of beats on another, that's a terrible thing. I think we can all acknowledge that. And I think, as you were pointing out, a decent person doesn't want to do that and so on. But not all cultural interaction is that. And it's going to happen. It's not even, you can't even say it's a good or bad thing. It's just what it is. Cultures change. Some cultures kind of absorb other cultures, or some cultures sort of fade away while other culture, you know, gets more influential, not because one is beating on the other, but just because of the way evolution of cultures happens. I think we need to, I mean, these are difficult conversations we're having, and we need to have them for sure. But I think we also have to acknowledge the reality of how culture works and just understand that it's not a good or bad thing that cultures interact. They just do that. And in fact, the surest way to for a culture to survive, or for any aspect of it to survive, is to let it interact with other cultures and be appreciated and, you know, celebrated and, you know,
and some of the most fascinating cultures out there are hybrids.
Yeah.
Recent enough that we know the history on them. I mean, look at Cajun and Creole culture. Look at a whole bunch of fascinating cultures that have come out of colonialism. Not that it was worth having colonialism.
Correct.
But now we've got some cool things.
Yeah. Good things can come out of bad things.
Good things almost always do, and vice versa.
And not and never justifies the bad thing, but it's good to me. It's a good and hopeful thing in our world that a bad thing can happen. And even though you wish it wouldn't have happened and you wish it could be undone or whatever, that people can make good things out of it. That's what humans do. And I think that says a lot of great things about humanity.
But the fact that you are asking this question, sorry, just to jump real quick here. I have yet to see Reservation Dogs. It is on my list. And William either hasn't seen it, or he watched it and totally forgot about it, which happens. I don't know the character. But I do love that kind of satirical character. The one where the whole point is essentially they are culturally appropriating and unaware of it. And what makes it funny is how unaware they are of that. I think that can be really great. So I absolutely would advocate for that. But no, you are asking these questions, and I think that is always important. And you are aware of the position. And that's the important thing. Just be very deliberate in your decisions on this stuff and be open about why. If you feel like Azure Talon's a dick, tell us about it. In the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Also, go to YouTube. Tell us about it there. Write into the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with all your emails about Azure Talon being a dick. Also, write in with other stuff. Also, go to the blog and tell us your thoughts on this. Azure Talon, if you would, go in and tell me the name of this game. I want to look into it a little bit. It looks interesting. Or it sounds interesting. You know,
all of that said, I personally don't. I mean, I personally resist playing characters who are different identity groups. I often feel like it feels not like I'm appropriating, but like it seems inappropriate to just make up this group's experience, right? It seems like it's not blackface or anything like it, but that's what it feels like.
And yeah.
I'm not saying that everybody else should feel that way. I'm just saying that I kind of do.
No, but you also come from a perspective, and you always forget this, but way back in the day when I would try and get you to do role-playing games and you were like, nope. One of your big arguments was essentially an opposition to the idea of pretending to be someone that wasn't you.
Right. I thought I'd always just play a version of myself, and that's not fun or whatever.
So this could potentially be an outgrowth of that, but I also see the argument you've made. And I have had friends of mine play characters of different backgrounds, and then I was sorry that they did later.
They
made some performative choices that I was not super comfortable with.
Well, right. I mean, what if I did that? I'd feel terrible if I was playing with you and you said, you know, you really went over the line here when you did this, I'd be like, oh crap, what was I thinking? Yeah. And I'd feel really terrible.
I will tell you what happens is I would tease you about it, and that would pretty much bully you into not doing that. not necessarily not picking that as a character option, but changing the way you play. And let's be honest, usually it's the voice. Usually it's the voice. That's what it does. But yeah, do tell us about that game, Edgehill, because I want to look at it. But also, yeah, everybody go to the blog and get your take on this stuff. This is a very serious and nuanced and complicated topic, so I'm very curious to see what people have to say on it. Also, write in with other things for us to talk about. If you like this kind of stuff, write us more of these, you know, difficult social puzzles. If you think this shit is dry and boring, write us things about other stuff that you think is cool. Whatevs. We're here. Go to aethertheater.com, look at all Williams stuff. Go to smashwords.com and look up Odd Wings. You have to pay $3 for it again. The sale is over. But I did get about 4 more purchases out of that. So
very good.
Also, I think this episode has to be called Second Best Title. And it's actually funny that this was the email we were dealing with. So I'm thinking, and tomorrow's our 12th anniversary.
It is. Oh my gosh, yeah. We didn't even mention that.
And so I thought I was going to make a reference to that.
Oh.
In the title.
Sure.
Something about 12 years.
Hmm.
Anything come to mind?
No.
See, I immediately was like, 12 years of podcast. You know, like 12 years of Slave, but then 12 years of podcast.
Golly.
And then immediately,
that's
a different part of my brain was like, no, I mean, no, no,
no,
no, no, no,
that's,
no,
that's a, no, that's a bad idea.
But I couldn't get it out of my head, and nothing really jumped out in the episode. So I think it's just going to be called Second Best Title, because the best title would have been the worst. I even tried. It weirdly parallels this episode, because I tried. I was like, but that's not based off of an actual, so then is it fine? And I'm just like, no, it's not. I think it legitimately is cultural appropriation, but also just.
So you should call it the second worst
title. Of taste. Yeah.
Second worst title.
Not I mean, the, like, yeah.
Second best
title. If Azure Talon had added into his email, also, I really want to call my character Tonto, like, we'd have a whole different conversation. That's what I feel like this is. This idea is calling the podcast Tonto. Ooh. Ooh. I don't know. Yeah.
Don't know.
It sounds fun. No, probably not. Yeah, we'll stick with second best worst title. Like, I know people like to be like, oh, you can't even be proud of being white anymore. Like, wait, what? No, what? But like, it's fine to be white. I mean, it's more about what white as a faction in the world has done than like what an individual white person is. And there are institutional systems that you need to be aware of and attempt to try and dismantle using your very genuine manifest privilege and all that kind of thing. Sure. So but it's fine. There's nothing to be ashamed of personally on that. The older I get, the more annoyed I am at being white. Because I just, it resonates too well with me. Like, when you see the terrible things happening and all, like, oh, all this institutionalized bullshit and all, but then there's a part of me that's like, I get where they come up with that.
I get like, where like, they come up with that.
I, I see inside the mind of the racist institutions, and I mean, I know it's not good, but it's like it has this feeling like I didn't do it, and I hope to work against it, but the guy who did do it is like my uncle or something. Like, I have that sort of thing. I'm just like, maybe. And it's not a chasing identity thing, because I don't do that, but I'm just like, could I be like a NA in terms of my race? I'm not. The older I get, the less I'm into this one. But to be fair, the older I get, the more I'm morphing into a strange, non-gendered, non-specified ball of admittedly white male privilege, but still.
I think too much in terms of like immigrant background, like where my family, different places my family comes from. And I also think in terms of the culture of the rural community I grew up in. And
you're always going on about how white people created all of Western civilization and are owed a debt from that. So
I don't do that. And I acknowledge that all of those ancestors had skin color like this. All the people in that culture had skin color like this, but it doesn't seem like the skin color had really anything to do with that. And many times a lot of the institutions and the large scale stuff that we today associate with whiteness, my family was against that stuff. So that doesn't seem, you know, us being white didn't prevent us from not liking things that we associate with, you know, whiteness.
Yeah. And that may also be a thing. I don't actually feel that way about my literal family. Like, I have people in my family who have done some real dumb, classist, racist bullshit. And I don't like that they did it, but in no way do I feel it tied to me. In the same way that if they did really cool stuff, I also would.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm the same way. Yep, I'm the same way. But none of that prevents me from understanding what whiteness, you know, is. When people talk about it, I get it. I think it's problematic, obviously, but I mean, you know, I'm an anarchist, so of course I think that, and I've been that way for a long time, so that's not really
me. I get this with men stuff too. People are always trying to hedge their bet. They're like, I mean, I don't want to say all guys are like such and such or whatever, and they say it, and I'm like, we are though. Like, I'm not personally, but you say a guy feels this way, and I'm like, yeah, they do. They are. White people, same deal. I'm like, no, we really are that bad. And the older I get, I'm just like,
ugh. Yeah, I just can't think of.
But I also feel that way about humanity as a species, so that's fine.
Yeah, that's it. That's it right there.
Yes. All right. So it's been 12 years of this. Think on that for a week and consider what you have wrought, because it's not just us. Y'all are listening to it. Saying it.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.